The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Beyond, and hello everyone, my name is Jonathan Dornbush, and this is Podcast Beyond, episode 618 of IGN's weekly PlayStation show, where we promise at least 25% talk about PlayStation. I think we just got a knock on the door. We'll see if anyone shows up in the studio.
PlayStation police.
Someone's breaking in. Shuhei?
It's Destin Legarry, everyone.
Hey, Destin. Come on into the show. It's cool. You can interrupt the beginning of Podcast Beyond, episode 618.
He's going to keep opening and shutting the door?
Is he going to walk
We're rolling with it. Anyway, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of podcast. I'm just going to go with it.
That's fine.
Of course, as I mentioned, I'm your host, Jonathan Dornbush. See you later, Dustin.
He was here for a cup.
Yes. When do you record Fireteam Chat? I'm walking in on that one.
Fridays. Of course, I'm also joined this week in addition to the ghost of Destin Legarry by Max Scoville.
Hey.
And Brian Altano.
Brap, brap.
You may be wondering, Lucy's not there again. Where could Lucy be? She's at a very important meeting, but she will be part of this episode later to talk about Jedi Fallen Order, which is now out. It's available. We've all played it. Brian, you've beaten it?
Yes.
Max, you have not beaten it?
No.
I have not beaten it, but Lucy did. I talked with her a little bit about her thoughts on the game, which we'll get to in a little bit. But before we get into all of that, as well as some big PlayStation news, I did want to first bring up a comment of the week. We started doing this last week, and from the YouTube comments of the show or the IGN comments, we'll reach in, pull out a comment, and this one was so boisterously positive about a certain member on this panel, I couldn't not read it on the show. Scary Hours said, "Brian Altano! Sir, you're the reason why I found my favorite game of all time, which is now Bloodborne.
Yes.
And after discovering Bloodborne, I found Dark Souls. And from Dark Souls, I came across Demon's Souls, which I am absolutely addicted to. Thank you, Brian. You are a giant among men. You are better than the rest, and you should be given a hefty raise. They need to change the name from IGN to AITM. Altano is the man. And you, sir, deserve a 10 out of 10.
Ain't a tool, man.
We didn't even give Bloodborne a 10 out of 10.
No.
But thank you. No, ain't a tool. Cool news.
Ain't a tool, man.
No, thank you very much. I think there's like a value to yelling about old, wonderful treasure games like that. Like that's a game from 2015. And still, like, I don't know. Like, this is always a good time of year to play it.
Even though I bounced off that game like 3 times because I'm bad at games, the amount at which the two of you and Lucy as well have talked about how great that game is, I am eventually going to go back and keep pushing forward until I get past that first terrible alleyway of men.
Max Scoville and I were in one of our particularly common joint funks.
Sure.
Where we were both sort
it's
of
not
just
a,
like,
that's not a weed thing. It's a depression.
We were both just both in a sort of like grumbly.
In
wet,
one of your dad funks.
One of those bad dad funks.
We were in one of our miasmas.
And we started talking about Jesus It's Toast, who's an amazing Bloodborne speedrunner. I've shouted him out on the show before. I'll do it again. He took a break for some personal health reasons, but he's sort of starting to get back. And we put on one of his speedruns. I think it was one of the runs he did for Awesome Games Done Quick. And he, just watching that dude plow through that game, even having played it a bunch of times, and he'll just do different runs where he's like, "I'm just dual wielding, or I'm just doing like this gun or this weapon."
He's like, "Today is flamethrower day. I'm just gonna fire spray or whatever it's called."
It's the best. Yeah. It's crazy impressive.
So shout out to him. That's Jesus. It's Toast. Or Here's Toast. I always get his name screwed
Jesus,
up.
Here's Toast.
Yeah. Look him up and watch his Bloodborne speedruns.
So good. And also, like, I just love that. Like, if you ever want to feel really bad about something, just watch those because you'll feel like a like just a fat thumbed simpleton.
Yeah.
He just goes in there and he'll be like casually talking and he's like wearing like his character's like half naked and just wearing suspenders and he's like just running around looking like Jack Skellington and he's just like, you know, flipping off of roofs and like sequence breaking and just, you know, two hitting bosses and you're like, okay. All right, fine.
I will also piggyback on this opportunity to, you as usual, further deflect praise off of myself because I have imposter syndrome and I'm incapable of taking it and dump more praise on Bloodborne. And also piggyback that by saying I really hope we actually get some sort of pro patch or a PlayStation 5 patch for this game. Yeah. Like, I don't even want like an entire overhaul or anything like that, but just like, I don't know, tighten up the graphics on level 4 or whatever. Click the button, export the HD 4K version.
Ever since you mentioned it for our PS5 wishlist episode, I more and more am on the idea of like, yeah, a Bloodborne PS5 like special edition Game of the Year edition thing just sounds right. Like, just seems like such an easy additional thing to have.
They should have a special edition PS5 that's just wet. Like, you just take it out of the box and it's just wet. And you're like, why is it wet? Bloodborne. Bloodborne.
Yep. And it's got the little goblin men on it. And they're like, blah, 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 blah.
Well, in addition to wet PS5s, we talk a lot about PlayStation on the show. And we're going to do that before we get into impressions about Jedi Fallen Order. And for those of you on the YouTube channel, this is where you can say the show begins in the timestamps with News Crunch.
Thank you, Ronnie Barrier. By the way, you have a package in our mailroom.
Yeah, Ronnie, please come pick that up.
Come get your mail.
Across the country.
And then come back and work here because we miss you.
Please do that. We do miss you. And
love
you,
Ronnie.
If you too, in addition to, I don't know if Ronnie did. I think he was the one sole exception. But if you have imposter syndrome as well, be sure to check out the IGN job openings. Without further ado, moving on. Wanted to start with the biggest piece of news this week, which was definitely a PS5 patent. That seems to reveal what is likely, and again, this is not officially confirmed, the final design of the PlayStation 5 controller. In recent reports for the PS5, for references worth noting, they have not named the controller. I am definitely going to call it the DualShock 5, because they're definitely going to call it the DualShock 5, but...
They make things so easy over there.
They do.
Yeah, it's like, it sort of removes all the fun of, like, guessing what the next things will be called, because we know, but at the same time, it's, like, kind of comforting.
But they still like holding off on telling us. There was, like, that six-month gap between the initial, like, the new generation of PlayStation, and then, like, yeah, it's PS5.
Yep.
It's like, could have just said that, but... Yeah?
Well, there was the original DualShock. Mm-hmm. Did they call it? Was it called the DualShock 2 with the PS2?
That might be the exception.
Because I feel like it wasn't until the... Did they call it the DualShock 3?
The 3 was, yeah.
Wasn't that first the 6-axis, though?
Yes.
What if they call it the 5-axis?
That's a step backwards from the 6-axis.
What if they just mess every... What if they found out that it was the 6-axis that was screwing everything up?
That could be part of the problem, yes.
Yeah. That was probably...
You listen to me spout a lot of nonsense, but it's not that often I get to see you just like break a little bit.
There's a couple times a day where the gears in my head just jam into each other and explode.
You just like stopped.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's going to be that kind of show.
Let's talk about the controller.
So yeah, the controller.
Quit messing around, Jonathan.
I'm trying not to. Let's talk about patents from the Japanese Patent Office website. They noted that the patent has been issued. Again, these are just illustrations. We have not seen a physical one in use. Wired, when they most recently published about the PS5, did note that they got to play with a prototype of this controller and said it largely was like the DualShock 4. And these patent drawings seem to indicate whatever this new controller is, we're going to assume these are close to the final version, are pretty much the DualShock 4. To give a quick recap, they include basically all the standard buttons you'd expect. So the directional buttons on the left, the face buttons on the right, the two symmetrical analog sticks at the bottom, L1, R1, L2, R2, a PlayStation button sort of at the middle top of it. Most notably, the speaker returns from the DualShock 4, the big touchpad returns, what seems to be a touchpad. We'll get to that in a little bit. People have some questions about that, as well as two buttons, which are basically where options and share are.
Right.
So assuming those are coming back as well. Notably, though, on the sort of like front back of the controller, I don't know what directions of the controller are. It's now using a USB-C plugin, which we know is expected to be used for charging the controller.
Which you can plug in correctly every single time.
Yes, it's not one or the other way.
So
USB-C is wonderful.
What a little bit of joy.
Yeah,
that's all.
And usually the USB-C is also usually indicative of faster charging capabilities and hopefully a better charge. But we'll get to that.
I already said that's all.
most notably. there's no seeming light bar
yeah.
on the back of the controller. The DualShock 4 introduced the light bar there, which primarily for PS4 base games, you know, some games have used it to be a little gimmicky. Some like change based on your health meter. Some are based on the multiplayer color of your character you choose in the multiplayer game. Sometimes it changes there. But primarily, they don't really have a gameplay function. They just get reflected back at you from the screen when it goes dark for a second.
Yes.
And you don't really see it while you're playing. But those lights are used for PSVR games, for tracking. So that seems to be a notable omission. The other sort of general thing I want to talk about is just the form factor. It pretty much seems like a PS4 DualShock, but the handles, the grip, seem to be a little chunkier and more akin to an Xbox One.
Mm-hmm. Are the sticks a little smaller, too?
They might be. There's definitely a large like circle around them. Like
yeah.
The sort of the area that they seem to take up at their base seems to be roughly similar. But yeah, they do seem a little smaller.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, that's definitely not a change that I don't think anybody was like sort of screaming for. Is make the control stick smaller. Like generally, smaller analog sticks are not my favorite kind. They happen to show up on Nintendo stuff here and there, and I find them kind of cumbersome a lot of times. That said, I think that like there's definitely if it's not broken, don't fix it, you know?
Yeah, DualShock 4 here. Is... Yeah, I wanted to get your guys' overall thoughts because the DualShock 4, I think, is their most acclaimed, like universally accepted. This is a really good feeling controller.
Yeah.
I love it.
Some people definitely do still prefer Xboxes, and I would say the 360 controller usually edges it out a little bit for me. But the Xbox One controller, a lot of people love. I think the form factor of the Xbox One, people seem to like more than the like tubes of the DualShock 4.
This is petty, but I don't like the idea of the Sony controller gradually becoming more like the Xbox controller.
Yeah.
Because they've been making this controller longer than Microsoft has, and it feels like they're sort of like, they're just like, you know, succeeding that to be like, oh, fine, we'll make it more like yours just to please the crowd, but it's like, but I want that silhouette.
To me, it's like the sort of like ultimate maturation of what was once evocative of the SNES controller. That's the original PlayStation controller is basically just like, what if SNES controller, but for PlayStation.
Yeah, just screw little legs.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the big, obviously, divide that happens with people's preferred function of controllers is whether or not they want asymmetrical sticks or symmetrical sticks. And, like, I'm luckily capable of jumping between both of those things. I know there are some people who just straight up can't go from Xbox to PS4 or vice versa. It just, like, totally breaks them. But for the most part, I've actually always preferred the symmetrical sticks. I think that like the advantage that Xbox does have is that they have multiple SKUs that scale towards people who want a little more customization and they want like those weird back paddles and stuff like that.
There's
those
nothing as
funny flaps,
the tappers.
There's nothing as great as the Xbox One Elite controller on PS4 when it comes to like customization. There are I haven't gotten to try, to be fair.
Aren't those the Hori ones?
There, I think Hori might make some.
Astro makes
right, a new one. Right. I've heard good things about
which
that
I
one.
Really want. I don't know why I don't have that.
Yeah, that one is the one I want to try. I reviewed another one, and I'm forgetting the maker of it, forgive me, but it wasn't quite there because the pads on the back of the Xbox One Elite controller more fit to where your like fingers naturally rest when you're holding it. This one for PS4, they all came down in the center, so you had to reach over into the middle of the back of the controller, and it was just a little unnatural. But
for the DualShock 5, as we're calling it, and we'll continue to probably for the rest of this and next generation, I find it odd that the touchpad is still there and it is still so prominent and doesn't seem, at least based on the stuff we've seen so far, to be different in any significant way. Like maybe it'll have multi-touch or something like that, but that's, we've like joked on this show for years that has basically just been relegated to a giant button or
it's an extra pause.
Like, yeah, or like scrolling on the map, which even then, like your brain doesn't naturally always think to do that because you're already, your thumbs are already on the sticks.
Yeah. John from the Podcast Beyond Facebook group actually asked, why do we still need a touchpad in 2020, aka the big pause button?
Yeah.
Which it actually has become.
The win button.
I have a theory.
Yeah.
I think that entire thing was made for Dreams, which isn't out yet. So it's going to be a PS5 game and they need to have the touchpad for Dreams. I don't know why. I think it's very important.
Okay.
If you're using Dreams in Early Access, Dan Cool, tell us how much you use the touchpad.
I feel like probably not that much.
Probably. Just, yeah. But I mean, it is backward compatibility to me is the obvious reason it's there, because this way every game that's on PS4 that's playable on PS5, the control wise, nothing has to be readapted.
Right.
Like when it's just playable on PS5, there has no computational need for it to be like, but where do I put this button?
Which is good, because if you look at like the sort of the crossplay stuff that we saw with Vita, like that was pretty uniform, but until it wasn't.
Yeah.
There were times where it was just sort of like you had to essentially fabricate buttons on the back using the back touch screen and stuff like that. And
yeah.
Things got a little wonky.
You know what the Vita could have used instead of a back touch screen?
Games.
Was just triggers, but also games. Yeah. Yeah.
No, it no had, I mean, I love the Vita.
The sad thing is that anytime something isn't just buttons, it makes it so much harder to like port it to remap it. Like you see this with Vita stuff, with Wii U stuff, with DS through 3DS.
Like, yeah, even it's just, like Tearaway to Tearaway Unfolded, the console version, they had to make a lot of changes because that game fully used the Vita. Mm-hmm. It used every piece of it.
Yeah.
And then it was like, now put it on a DualShock.
It's also like, I mean, to fully humor the nonsense you said earlier about dreams being the exact reason why this giant thing is there. We have seen in the past sort of killer apps at launch that are designed around a specific apparatus on the system. Nintendo does this all the time. Obviously the Mario 64 and the joystick being the first analog stick really to be fundamentally placed into every single controller at the start of a generation was a big thing, and that's those two went hand in hand. But we've also seen companies over time launch with features and then slowly backburner them, which I think we did see with a lot of Vita stuff. You know, back touch was basically phased out after a mm-hmm. while. Let's see, the six axis, motion controls.
I mean, 3D on the 3DS.
3D on
the
3DS.
Every big game on 3DS for the last 3 years of its life barely use 3D.
Yep. And then there's sort of like mid-generational jumps like Wii Motion Plus, which started as a plug-in and then became base as part of the default. So I think that they're future-proofing stuff. That said, we are probably heading closer and closer to a console generation that has mid-cycle upgrades, and so why not revamp everything at the same time? You know, like the backwards compatibility thing is something that is important, and it's obviously being baked in on day one for the PS5. But if we look at the PlayStation Pro model of like introducing a new console midway through the generation, or the fact that like if you try to pull up apps on a phone from 4 years ago, they don't work. There's obviously a sort of planned obsolescence when it comes to some of this stuff. So I wonder how much push and pull we're going to see there.
Well, and it's also the other interesting thing is the other confirmed aspects of the controller we know are in there, which are, for lack of a better term, similar gimmicks, in that the haptic feedback that's more designed to make the controller simulate the feeling of different things in game, as well as the more adaptive triggers that can more precisely, like, I guess, give you fine tuning of how it is to pull back a bow.
I mean, how cool would it be if like the touchpad is actually suddenly a thing that we all love and use?
Yeah.
Like what if like lock picking or like moving a dial is suddenly like, if you drag your thumb across the touchpad, now it's just like, okay, that's like a crappy like IBM touchpad from an old laptop. But like if there was a haptic thing that made it feel like there was a ratcheting sensation, you're like, oh, that's a, you know, that's like a safe combination.
Yeah. Like locks always have those sort of like six pins or whatever, as people are like picking a lock and you just feel through to find the weak one.
You get like little bits of that.
Yeah.
Current games, but something that actually like really took advantage of that.
Well, the interesting thing is I think it depends on how much the industry at large takes these things on.
That's exactly
usually
it.
These things die because they aren't used on a widespread level. And if Xbox has similar things in it, especially with the haptic feedback and triggers, which I think we've gotten some rumors and speculation, even some talk that they are leaning toward possibly including those things, it's much more likely that the industry as a whole will adapt those for what we use.
Yeah, I mean, that's the issue though, right? It's like with third parties, there has to be parity. And if they don't feel like developing and taking a month or two to develop for these like specific systems on one platform, that being said, this could be the market leading platform, and that gives them some justification.
For sure.
You end up with like features that would either be ignored entirely on a hardware level or would only exist on one specific platform and could in fact also deter. I look at stuff like Rayman Legends, which had like the Murphy touchscreen stuff.
Yeah, for the
and
Wii
on
U.
Yeah, on some yeah. systems that was like a kind of a pain in the ass, and on others it was nixed entirely. Whereas something like Chinatown Wars, when it came to DS, had a bunch of like touchscreen stuff for like lock picking to steal cars and open trunks, and then they put it on PSP and they were just like, just press A.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Well, the flip side, like, I don't know, you push the home button on an iPhone. That's not a button. That's a flat thing.
Yeah,
like,
I also totally well, have. I don't even have that button.
Yeah.
Oh, it's great. Yeah. No, it's a wonderful, fun little gimmick. You've got like facial recognition. That's a PlayStation 6 feature.
Yeah,
but, like,
we'll get
there. Don't. I think it's very easy to think haptics and think like, oh, it's going to be like a, you know, like a Wiimote, you know, or a Joy-Con. Sorry. But like, it's going to be kind of cool if that. Like, does it actually say in the patent if it's if the touchpad is still a button or if it's?
Well, it's actually unclear, and I brought in a question that some people have speculated because there were like what I think are kind of fake but interesting mock-ups that people did months ago. On that note, Brian, not you, another Brian from the Facebook group, asked, Do you think they'll put a touch screen in the DualShock 5 in place of the touchpad? Would love to have a touch screen at the ready for the chat, in-game map, etc. I know that would be a huge drain on the battery, but it's the next logical evolution of that design.
Oh, like an actual screen, like a VMU. Like
this, yeah. Like this little thing here for switching News Crunch and, you know, playing the Podcast Unlocked intro theme.
If don't touch that. It's very expensive.
I'm not going to touch it. But
you
I mean,
that's, the IGN
it's kind of crazy. And you see this with like some gaming keyboards where like there will be like special dedicated buttons that are like, oh, this is your, you know, like this is your hotbar or whatever. Like that would be kind of amazing if we got that on a controller.
It'd be really cool. My worry kind is battery.
Yeah, battery. Yeah. And it would be a pain in the ass. But
because the DualShock 4 already has the worst battery life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you and I were talking about that in the office yesterday, actually. I wonder why that is. You sort of theorized that maybe they just use the cheaper battery than the competitors. The Xbox controller uses double A's. And I remember right off the bat, I was like, well, we're not going to do that. And I bought one of those like battery packs that charges, play and charge kit or whatever it's called. But other people swear by those things because when your battery dies in your controller, you don't have to replace the whole controller. On Xbox, you can just pop in new batteries. And on PS4, you can't. Although I've never had to deal with that personally.
Yeah,
I don't know if you guys have.
I haven't either, but at the very least, something like USB-C charging to me implies one, faster charging, which will be great, and I don't have to just leave it like overnight. But presumably a better battery as well is being in use there.
That'd be cool.
The lack of light bar is really interesting for the sort of like continuity of PSVR though. Because that puts that system in a weird spot.
Yeah. Chris from the Facebook group asked, didn't they confirm that PSVR is going to have continued support on PS5? Since the new controller patent doesn't have the light bar, how is PSVR going to be supported with games like Astrobot, which keeps track of not just the lights on your headset, but the light on the controller?
Yeah.
And it's a weird... What does the legacy then of the DualShock 4, do we need continue to need those in the same way we need a PlayStation Move controller from the PS3 era?
Yep.
And then suddenly the PS5 supports three eras of controllers.
Well, that's sort of the weird legacy that happens when you have like platform specific hardware functionality. It essentially kills off any future proofing whatsoever. And it's like, if we are sort of heading into an all digital, potentially streaming future, to have all of these sort of walled gardens of video games that are locked off by specific hardware features, it makes things difficult. So I think any console manufacturer in 2020 needs to look at the past and look at the future and understand that like anything that they decide has to be something that sort of works for a very long time. Because you can't just take a PSVR game and drop it on 2022's version of PlayStation Now, whatever they decide to call it or rebrand it. If it only works specifically with like now two generations of old hardware controllers, you know, like a Move controller and another thing, like eventually they'll have to figure out a way to have some sort of like way where these things can communicate congruently.
Yeah, like they've introduced new PlayStation Move controllers that have better battery charging capabilities and everything, but we haven't gotten a major upgrade in the controller front. But assuming they're going to keep with something like that, do they introduce a new generation of those as well that come bundled with a like PSVR DualShock and that still has the light bar on it? Like, do you need that to play? Like,
somebody got really mad at me in the comments for talking about the original PlayStation VR controllers, which use USB micro instead of USB mini or vice versa.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, I think that there are people who just got like that. The new controllers came out like a year after PlayStation VR.
I'll back you up on that, by the way. Not only did that happen, but also there was a massive shortage of Move controllers when the original PSVR SKU launched, making it next to impossible to actually go into a store and purchase brand new ones because they were all, from what we heard, boxed up from the previous generation. In shortage, and also a lot of their batteries had exploded because they were like literally 7 or 8 years old.
Yeah. Oh.
And so what I did was I had one, I don't know why, because I have like just relics of old. Sure. I have a drawer full of just like vintage video game controllers,
yeah,
and one of those like weird prepper dad things to be like, someday we'll need these. And I went on GameStop and I purchased a used one. Basically, the second we found out that that was what that system was going to use, and we had like heard rumblings of shortages, I think I bought a set of them used. And so I have one PlayStation Move controllers where the ball is like bright white because I'd never use it. And another one I bought probably from like a chain smoking alcoholic psychopath on GameStop's website, mm-hmm, that was like deep, deep beige. And oh, so I have, no, these two controllers that are like different things. I don't, yeah, even know if PSVR can see them well.
Good cop and bad cop.
Yeah, exactly. And so eventually they did reissue newer versions of that with a different USB, charger.
We have different sets of those in the office, and it's actually really funny because depending on who uses what PSVR headset, it's like, do you have a USB micro? No, I have a USB mini. Okay,
yeah.
I can't charge these, mm-hmm, right now.
No, I think their assumption with PSVR, which, you know, wasn't exactly the smoothest rollout for something, was that people just had boxes of old Move controllers sitting around because you couldn't walk into a retail store during that time.
They had boxes of PS, yes, Move controllers sitting around.
Everyone, yeah, else, yeah, must also.
Yeah. No,
they were we got to get rid of these somehow. Let's invent a VR headset to go,
yeah,
with them.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of a running joke that this flagship new futuristic video game hat couldn't work unless you use stuff from a generation prior.
Yeah. It's very strange, and it does pose a lot of questions, and obviously the patents don't confirm the official final design, which we probably won't see for another few months. I assume that's something we might see at the launch reveal event that we're all hypothesizing, mm-hmm, is February, so if that's the case, we probably will have a better idea then. But it does raise a lot of questions about the backward compatibility nature of this, but it doesn't shock me that the DualShock 5 patent looks a hell of a lot like the DualShock 4.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's bad.
No, and the good news is the PlayStation 4 was a tremendous success.
Yes.
So if we do need to run out and buy a bunch of old DualShock 4s, I mean, like, they literally made a rose gold one like 2 weeks ago. There's, yep, a clear one. Like, there's constant. I saw like a, like, Slick Deals had a sale for the clear one for like $30 or $40 the other day.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you'll be able to get them. This was a hit. The Move was not.
Yeah. So if you need a DualShock 4, if it's not compatible with PlayStation 5 games on the whole, but you need it for PSVR, you can probably find one pretty,
yeah,
easily. But yeah, obviously we'll find out a lot more on the DualShock 5, whatever its name is. I assume the name will come in a month in an article, and then we'll get the reveal event and see what it looks like.
Orbis.
I'll take Orbis.
I hope it's the boomerang.
Bring back the boomerang. If they sold a special edition boomerang, people would buy it.
Dude, they did that, like, obviously people have nostalgia for it, but they did the Duke controller for Xbox,
yeah,
which is like this big, gargantuan, horrible thing that people love because they used it. The boomerang never came out. That,
yeah,
was like a, that was like an E3 prototype thing, right?
Yeah, or TGS. It was so hated that they were, mm-hmm, like, all right, we're just going to put the 6-axis, put some motion in it.
If they actually released the boomerang, people would, like, there'd be so many weirdos all excited.
Oh, God,
I'm,
yeah,
excited about it.
I would get one of those,
yeah,
especially if it had motion controls for driving games and said vroom, vroom, vroom. or you put feet on it and it could be the baby's legs from Death Stranding.
Ooh, there you go.
Lots of bad ideas.
Whatever
here.
The boomerang you want it to be, it can be with the power of the PlayStation 3. Moving on from that, a couple other pieces of quick news. Wanted to briefly mention Blair Witch, which was formerly an Xbox One console exclusive, is coming to PS4 on December 3rd when all platforms, which I believe it's also on PC, get an update to the game that essentially allows you to customize your buddy, the good pup in that game who's with you the whole time, which for all that I've heard of that game is the best part of that.
Yeah.
So
if you
want a customizable pup, play that game.
That's a really weird thing to add to your horror game.
Yeah.
You know?
Of all the things to add to Blair Witch.
Yeah, that's a...
Dog dress up.
I play that game. That's it's not great.
Yeah.
It's interesting. The setting is really cool. It definitely mimics that feeling of being completely disoriented and lost in the woods. But ultimately I think that, like, I played that game because it was free on Game Pass one day, and that made it, in the same reason people defend Cloverfield Paradox, where they're like, it just showed up on my TV and I didn't have to leave the house. Great. Didn't cost me anything. I think that, like, paying full retail price for this game on PS4 is, unless you're like totally starved for, you know, survival horror stuff,
maybe give it a pass until a sale.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Until it's on PlayStation Plus in like 6 months, maybe.
Exactly. I'm glad it's coming though, at least.
Yes,
you know, it gives people options.
More options for people to play. Another one, speaking of the Move controllers, PlayStation announced all their Black Friday deals obviously we don't make any money off that, but I did want to mention one if you're interested in getting a PSVR. There's a PSVR multi-game bundle for $200 US, $249 in Canada. This is doesn't have Move controllers, but what it does have is a PSVR headset, PlayStation camera, and five PSVR games, which includes Astrobot Rescue Mission, Skyrim VR, RE7 Biohazard, which you can play out of VR as well, Everybody's Golf VR, and the PlayStation VR World bundle, which was like the intro to
Holy crap. That's
cool.
Yeah, and that's
amazing.
Yeah. So that's for 200 US MSRP.
It comes with all of those games?
All of those games. That's normally a $300 bundle, so you're saving 100 and you're getting those five games. Astrobot and RE7, I think, are worth that alone.
Oh my god, yeah.
But that bundle is huge. If you want a PSVR bundle with Move controllers, and I'm mostly mentioning this because we all like PSVR a lot and it sells well during the holidays, so we hope if you're interested, pick it up during these sales. The PSVR Blood and Truth and Everybody's Golf bundle is $249, so actually $50 more, but you get a PSVR headset, PlayStation camera, two PS Move controllers, and Blood and Truth and Everybody's Golf VR. The Move controllers on their own go for like $70 or $80, so that's where that price raise goes, but obviously you get a bit knocked down, and Blood and Truth...
Yeah, Blood and Truth kicks so much ass.
Yeah. Friendly reminder, that's like one of the best PlayStation games this year.
Yeah, hands down. I think that's...
I actually forgot it came out this year.
I think that's on my top 10 list. It's on my list too.
And also during the holidays, Black Friday sales, PlayStation Plus will be 25% off. So renew your PlayStation Plus then. Briefly wanted to
mention... Mine just automatically did that, and I'm not sure how I feel about that.
Don't worry.
A Christmas miracle!
wanted to mention something not directly related to PlayStation news necessarily, but someone who has a long history with PlayStation. Amy Hennig, of course, first famous for... Why can't I think of that franchise's name?
Uncharted.
No, the one before it that she worked on. ActRaiser? Is it ActRaiser?
Did she work on ActRaiser?
There's a game series she worked on.
Michael Jordan, Chaos in the Windy City.
That was it.
There you go.
She wrote The Wind.
Anyway, of course, Uncharted...
I think she did actually work on that.
Really?
Yeah.
Uncharted 2 director Amy Hennig announced a new partnership where she is forming a new interactive division, they're calling it, at Skydance Media. Skydance are the producers of the newer Star Trek reboots, Jack Ryan, Terminator, and the Mission Impossible movies. So she will be creating and heading a new interactive division along with her producing partner, Julian Beek, to, quote, create inviting and innovate experiences that Skydance is known for in features and television. So they might do some adaptations. But essentially, the other quote that Skydance Media gave is, quote, the interactive media landscape is continually changing, and Amy and Julian are creative and visionary leaders of this evolution. Together, we will create within this new sphere the same type of event-level entertainment experiences that Skydance is known for in features and television. So they never really mention games. They talk about interactive entertainment, immersive stories through technology, things of that nature, but they never say games, which makes me think Telltale-like experiences...
Or VR-like experiences.
Or VR, yeah. Or things like Erica, which came out earlier this year during Gamescom.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which was a live-action sort of choose-your-own-adventure experience. It sounds like those are the types of things they're working on.
Yeah. They literally just shipped a very poor Terminator game like a week ago.
Yeah, Terminator Resistance.
Resistance. Yeah. It completely came and went. The timing was odd because it was 2 weeks after the movie already had bombed in theaters. I don't know what you do with all that. I would like to see the world of like video game movie adaptations return in some way that aren't just like kind of like shoddy mobile games and like quick cash ins mm-hmm. or just like sort of like VR excursions that exist like in a mall somewhere for a weekend. I would like something that's a little more fleshed out.
Someone who has a knack for story like Amy makes a lot of sense. For
yeah, yeah, totally. She totally gets it. So I'm really excited to see what comes from all that.
Yeah, it's interesting to me because it is something like, obviously Amy was working at Visceral Games when that shut down and the EA Star Wars project that was there, Ragtag, was canceled. But
she also very publicly bounced off of Uncharted 4 after creative
differences.
Yeah.
The game, by the way, I was thinking of was Legacy of Kain, Soul Reaver, and Soul Reaver 2.
Yep.
But yes, she also worked on Michael Jordan, Chaos in the Windy City.
Correct.
I feel like she was obviously in a position after especially the A stuff of I want to pick the project I want to work on. I don't think Amy was necessarily hard up for job opportunities. Like most people in this industry probably wanted to have her talent involved in their studio, I would have assumed. So this feels like a choice born out of her creative interests, rather than maybe something Skydance was fully investing in already. Like maybe this was sort of a joint agreement they came to, but I'm very curious to see what they do.
Yeah, I think she just kind of got a bad hand over the last few years of sort of just like a string of tremendously cool opportunities that didn't entirely pan out. I had a teacher in art school in college who was, he was a comic book illustrator and he did covers for DC and Marvel. And he like notoriously told the class like several times, none of my covers have gone to print. I always got kill fees.
Yeah.
But I still got paid. And it was like this weird lesson to us to sort of be like, sometimes you'll work on something tremendously cool and it doesn't actually go into print. But as long as you still get paid, like you're still working, you're still busy, you're still honing your craft, that's really awesome.
And it doesn't mean what you did was bad.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And it's like a weird, it's serendipitous that we did eventually get a third person action Star Wars game in the same week where Amy's like, I'm starting a new thing. It's like, okay, everybody's sort of found a home.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see. Obviously, I have loved her work in the past, so I'm excited to see what she does in the future. But yeah, it's very curious to see Skydance. Films can be amazing. The games related to those films, not always so. So mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if she can make an awesome Mission Impossible Telltale style game, maybe. Briefly wanted to mention MPD came out in between shows, but October's best-selling game, number one, of course, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2019. It actually then immediately became the top-selling game of the year. Number two was The Outer Worlds, multi-platform, though the developers are now Xbox exclusive owned, followed by Luigi's Mansion 3, Madden NFL 20, NBA 2K20, Ghost Recon Breakpoint, WWE 2K20, FIFA 20, Borderlands 3, Ring Fit Adventure. Obviously, we'll have to wait till November MPD comes out to see where Death Stranding fell, but that was launched at the very beginning of the month, which we don't have to see too much, actually. We usually see like big releases toward the end of a month now. So it'll be curious to see where it lands there. But
it was charting really well on Amazon when we looked around launch.
On Amazon, and then from, I think, ancillary sales from other territories, it's been doing well. Yeah. MPD is North American-based, but yeah, it'll be curious to see.
I'm interested to see what the legs on that game
what month like. Two looks
don't,
like.
Even. Don't make a joke.
The no, baby legs from the boomerang.
That's that's pretty abysmal for Ghost Recon.
Like yeah, Ghost Recon kind of, and that was why we had talked about, I guess, a couple weeks ago, or maybe even last week. Time is irrelevant anymore, but of the nature that Ubisoft delayed a lot of their games to give them the time that was right, and they pretty were openly like, yeah, Breakpoint didn't succeed like we thought it would, despite Wildlands being such a success, and they were kind of like, because Wildlands was such a success and the way we let it be a success for 2 years, people were not clamoring for a new game.
Yeah,
and we just misjudged that.
No, that's definitely a tough balance. I think people just really stuck with the first game for a long time. The first one was one of those games where if you had asked me like, how well do you think this game would sell? I'd be like, I'll do okay. And I was like, oh, that's one of the best selling games that year, and went on to be a monumental success. That's also like the sequel is their Ubisoft Studios flagship game this year that isn't like Just Dance. You know, like their hardcore gaming flagship. Everything else got pushed to next year and then got pushed even further after this one underperformed. So
that's nuts, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like they also, like the first one came out, was it like a little bit prior to Breath of the Wild?
Yeah.
Like it came out in this weird sort of blind spot of this, there wasn't much to play. And this one was like, it came out alongside Call of Duty.
Yeah.
And I feel like the first one definitely, or, you know, Wildlands, whatever, was like the people who, you know, walk into GameSpot like, you got a new Call of Duty? I was like, no. What about that? You know, close enough. You know, it's definitely.
I want to shoot stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. What There's do I?
Yeah.
Four military dudes on that box.
It's exactly. Probably, yeah.
It's interesting thing to see.
Go up alongside a Call of Duty game is like.
Ubisoft's had a lot of up years, and then this year has been a bit of a downturn. I'm very curious to see how they rebound next year because they do have a lot of big games in development, and then assuredly, you know, the long rumor to next Assassin's Creed for next year, possibly, that we're all guessing as a launch title for next gen.
They love launch titles.
I was going to say they are at the launch of everything with some support. Even Apple Arcade, they're like, here's a Rayman.
Apple Arcade, Stadia was a big thing for them. They put up a blog post today of like, we're committed and continue to with Stadia because we did Project Steam a year ago. So like this is a thing for us. So Ubisoft had a misfire, but it's not the end of them. So
yeah, next year we've got Watch Dogs 3, Gods and Monsters,
New Rainbow Six Quarantine, and then whatever else hasn't been announced.
And then some Assassin's Creed thing, maybe.
We assume. Yeah. There wasn't one this year, so common sense would dictate next year.
Prince of Persia.
I loved that reboot sort of one from like yeah. 08.
Me too.
It wasn't perfect. But
the one where you couldn't die?
Yeah.
But it was like gorgeous?
Yeah, it was the art style. I love that. Before we get on to Jedi Fallen Order, because I do want to devote a lot of time to that, very briefly just wanted to mention a big report from Kotaku that came up earlier this week, I believe. EA is reportedly overhauling Anthem with help from its other developers. In a report from Kotaku, sources claim that BioWare has been working on some kind of overhaul for Anthem, which has struggled since launch earlier this year. I'm reading from Matt Kim, our reporter story on IGN. The project is being referred to by some as Anthem 2.0 or Anthem Next, according to those sources. The report says concrete details on the overhaul are sparse, but the main takeaways are that EA and BioWare have not given up on Anthem and are instead working on content that will breathe new life into the game, similar to the Taken King expansion for Destiny. Kotaku sources say the developer are looking into completely overhauling core Anthem systems like loot, quests, and social elements. Some of the changes reportedly include making it so that players don't need to go back to Fort Tarsis after every mission, and, quote, what a mission technically is, one source told the outlet. Quote, that was always a weird disconnect. We're trying to integrate the disparate parts of the game together. All these details are very sparse right now, and it's very unclear, I think, where the game is going to go from here, even within the studio, based on these reports, but IGN sources told us as well that although developers across BioWare's Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, and Austin, Texas studios are both working on the Anthem overhaul, anonymous sources tell IGN that non-BioWare teams are also chipping in. EA's wider art team that supports multiple EA titles like UFC and Plants vs. Zombies have done some environment art ostensibly to free up time for the core team to do more major things, our source said. They said it was, quote, unusual for them to support BioWare since, like EA, DICE, and Respawn, BioWare have dedicated art teams.
Wow.
Regardless of what's currently going on with Anthem getting support from other EA studios to focus on this, doesn't seem like they're going to let sort of the failure first few months of Anthem dictate the future of it, what that future looks like, especially with next gen on the horizon. You have to assume they'd want Anthem 2.0 to be something that's on next gen.
Yeah, I mean, but I think they originally discussed that franchise as being like a 10-year long thing, right? Like they wanted it to have a long tail. And then
they kind of cribbed Destiny's notes in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and then we got to E3 this year and they barely mentioned it. EA had an entire play day or whatever they call it, and there was almost no talk of Anthem. I think one of the only ways to really rescue that thing is to completely relaunch it as sort of a free-to-play thing and get people in. Like, I notice a lot of sort of stuff where people will get a console and they'll go into the sort of free section on the store and they'll grab a bunch of games and then just totally fall in love with them. That's like the best way to get people in, to sort of be like, okay, well, what's the barrier of entry here? Zero? Okay.
Fine, I'll give it
great.
A try.
Great. Yeah. And if you want to kick money into it, you can later on.
EA doesn't have a ton of good faith with the, you know, the gaming audience anyway, and I feel like this was just a colossal disaster.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I mean, I think the nuts and bolts of that game, like the flying feels good, like the world is gorgeous, but at the same time it is like, hey, here's Iron Man meets Avatar, you know, copying Destiny structure. And it's like, it feels very much like it was grown in a lab to be like, how do we make a thing that people will play? I mean, switching it to free to play would probably go a long way.
Yeah.
I mean, if they are going to copy Destiny.
And very clearly, like some of those quotes about them being like, what the missions actually even like are structured, and going back to Fort Tarsis. When you go to Fort Tarsis, the game is in first person and it's more a standard BioWare game. When you're out in the world, like you said, it's Avatar meets Iron Man. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely the best, like the closest to an Iron Man game we've gotten, a good one forever. But
I did think that reversal made a lot more sense. Like Destiny is first person when you're out in the world and third person when you're walking around. So I guess it's like a social space. You can see your avatar. But as far as like it being a role-playing thing goes with Anthem, it actually makes sense because you're like, oh, when you get in the vehicle, suddenly you're seeing the whole vehicle. And it's like,
but they did feel like two different parts, like two different games.
Yeah, it was a weird thing. Also, I mean, BioWare, people like it because it's a, you know, compelling story and sensual romance options. And they were like, no, we have none of those things. Go out there and kill a bunch of dinosaurs.
And maybe Anthem 2.0 can add in romance.
Can let you kiss the anthem. I just want to kiss the anthem. I have no idea, actually.
It's explained in lore. I don't remember that.
Is it?
It is. It's mentioned in there.
Who could possibly know, really? There's no one.
Yeah.
It's a shame. Check out Fireteam Chat. They might talk about it in relation to Destiny.
Yeah, maybe I'll barge into that episode.
Yeah.
Moving on from that, though.
Actually, fun fact. Yes. You know what Destin Legarry has sitting on his desk?
What?
Whole box of cherry tomatoes.
He does. It's
really?
A huge...
It's really weird.
Why? It's crazy. Actually, I buy
does
cherry...
Does he pop them? Like,
yeah. I
get groceries at Costco, and I'll get cherry tomatoes there, and they're in a pretty big container. His is about quadruple the size of the one that I get, even at that big box idiot store. So
yeah.
I wonder where he goes to get those cherry tomatoes.
I don't know.
Maybe the Honey I Shrunk the Kids
store.
They
should be refrigerated too. It's odd though.
Destin, no, you don't have to refrigerate tomatoes. Write into beyond@ign.com and tell us where you got those tomatoes.
I'm going to repeat that because you don't have to refrigerate tomatoes.
What?
No. Yeah.
Not even cherry tomatoes?
No, cherry tomatoes actually go bad in the fridge.
Not even at work?
No, leave them out. Leave them on Destin's desk. Okay. Bring a head of lettuce too. Leave it on his chair.
Moving on to a game that I don't think has any cherry tomatoes in it, but does have a lot of fun. Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order is out and now available. You at home are playing it. I asked for questions in the Facebook Beyond group, which is facebook.com/groups/podcastbeyond. We have all played it on the panel. I'm going to quickly throw to my conversation with Lucy O'Brien because we talked about her opinions on the game as well. Lucy, after weeks of absence... Has it been weeks, or did you show up in the middle of weeks? I've made at least two fake lower third names for you.
And I've been very impressed with both of them.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're a pun master. Well done. Thank you.
I try. That's all I have fun to do here. No, of course, I've brought you in because we're going to be discussing the new Cats trailer for the next 47 minutes.
Cool. I'm really happy with that. In fact, if I could just change my job to just talking about Cats. That movie... I'd be happy.
Perfect. And why don't we do that right now?
Perfect.
No, of course.
Perfect.
You are the pun master. We're actually going, of course, to be hearing your thoughts about Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order since you can't join us during the scheduled Beyond recording because schedules are crazy here at the end of the year. So thankfully,
absolutely bananas.
We were able to carve out some time because you've beaten the game.
I have, yes.
And as the same with the rest of the conversation, we're not going to go into like any story spoilers that are not at least like prominent in the marketing. I think that sort of is fair game for us. And anything that we feel is there's a couple collectible things we will make it clear we're not going to talk about before saying like spoiler warning. But since you've beaten it now, I haven't. I think I'm a little over halfway through. Just what are your general thoughts about the game?
I think it's great. I had such a great time with it. It's definitely one of the best AAA games of the year.
Yeah.
I think that it was almost amazing.
Yeah.
I think it was let down overall by a little bit of a lack of polish. It's quite janky.
Yeah.
And that really, really is apparent when you're playing through some of its platforming sections, which are plentiful. So you do tend to notice it fairly frequently. But, you know, that aside, for the most part, I think it's a great, like, rollicking Star Wars adventure. Yes, I used that word. I said it out loud. I didn't just write it down. I actually said it.
It's quite visceral,
It's quite visceral.
Obviously, people will hear a little bit of my thoughts later on it, too. But I agree with you on the whole of, I think, like, in spite of some of its jank, it still, like, shines through because the parts that do work are so good.
Yeah.
I was curious on your side of it. Like, how big of a Star Wars fan are you in general? Obviously, it's hard not to, like, have some knowledge of Star Wars at this point. But, like...
I'm a Star Wars fan. I'm not a massive Star Wars fan, but you know, I've seen the original trilogy multiple times, and I love the new trilogy. And like everyone, sort of felt very lukewarm on the prequels. But beyond that, you know, I haven't dug into much lore, so I'm not like a super like Brian Altano style Star Wars fan. But you know, I love the movies. I love the characters. I love the stories, and I think what this game does so well is that it really manages to capture that that sort of sense of stakes, but also sense of fun.
Yes,
that Star Wars does so well. Like, and a lot of that is because it marries a great story, great characters, with this kind of Souls-inspired gameplay loop. So you know, you do feel like every encounter, like you have to put thought into it, and like if you die, that matters in this game.
Even a simple fight against like a small spider or a giant rat can still knock you out if you're not careful.
Totally, and especially when they attack in numbers. Yes. Like, you know, it's so I get so disappointed in myself when I get killed by a swarm of spiders because it's just like, oh come on, I am better than this.
But going a little bit back to the story, because you were mentioning, I think it does a pretty great job of like a tonal balance, which is what Star Wars is. Like, inherently to me, when I think of Star Wars, there are like the very serious operatic, like soap opera hero's journey you know, yes. story beats to it. Yeah. And then there are also adorable, silly, crazy, weird aliens running around.
Totally.
And it, I think this game marries them very well in terms of, like, there are these cute, adorable, or gross monsters on the world, but then also I'm really invested in Cal and the crew of the ship's story.
Yes, yes. And Cal, like, I was sort of initially just a bit like, oh, what is this, you know, what is this guy? He seems very kind of white bread sort of thing.
Yeah.
And when I say that, I just mean he doesn't seem particularly interesting.
Yeah.
But, the, you know, he really flourished for me throughout the game, and in the end I was really drawn to him. And of course, you mentioned the crew, and I think they're wonderful. And yeah. in particular, his mentor, Sarah.
She is so good.
She is so, yeah. so good. And she gets, she, in my mind, actually gets the more complex and narratively satisfying story arc
yes,
in yeah. the game. And I think that that was a real surprise for me and did actually kind of go off the beaten hero's journey track. And I really liked that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I yeah. think that performance, too, and I believe I'm going to look up the actress's name because I don't want to get it wrong, but I believe it's Deborah Wilson.
It is Deborah Wilson from memory. Yeah, yeah. She did a wonderful job. She continues to kill it. Like, she's been in a series of games recently where she's yeah. just nailing it.
It's definitely one of my favorite performances in a game this year. And yep, it's one of those things where, like, we talk a lot about, like, it's a great story for a game. I think, like, the performances in this are just, like, really good performances.
Yep,
and
yep.
everything really shines through, and it's very clever and funny what it needs to be.
Totally, and it's got yeah. some, like, real, like, there's some really great moments of just, like, visual gags. Like, with the stormtroopers, of course. Like, the stormtroopers yeah. are just so perfect. Like, with their little quips.
Yeah.
You know, and just, they're really played up to comedic effect.
There's some great, like, the shouts in this game that the enemies do are some of my so favorite good. In a while. Like, whether it's the there's the heavier troopers, I forget their name, but the ones who essentially have, like, the batons, the yep. stun batons. Yep.
The assault troopers, yeah, I think. Yeah,
if you kill a standard stormtrooper, they'll be like, yeah, we didn't need him anyway, or things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
they're
yeah.
just so cruel to one another. Like, oh no, why did that happen? Like,
they're such, they, like, they acknowledge that they're grunts, yes, which I yeah. love.
I really appreciate it. And I love the, and we can get into the combat a little bit, the, like, scale of it, because yeah. we were, like, it's easier to take on a small spider than it is the larger spider enemy
totally.
That you can
yeah.
fight. But even with, you know, human-sized enemies, there's a wide range whether it comes to a standard trooper who is just shooting their blaster at you. And, man, there are a few things that are satisfying this year in a game. Like, some of Control's gameplay for me is, but the ability to perfectly time block
yep.
one of their blasts back at them
oh,
is
feels
just
so good.
Every time. Like, yeah. I always wait for them. I'll do this all day.
Yeah.
Like, it's the Captain America, I can do this all day sort of thing. It's just so great. But I love that variety. How did you, as someone who has a bigger love than I do in experience with the Souls, mm-hmm. Dark Souls games, Bloodborne, how do you feel this combat measured up to those systems? Because it's obviously influenced by those, but yeah. how do you think it stands on its own?
Well? Yeah, I think that the combat, for the most part, is really satisfying. I think it totally nails the feeling of wielding a lightsaber, which is yeah. so crucial for a Star Wars game. Yeah. In comparison to the Souls games, it is a little less precise, which does matter on higher difficulties and can get a little frustrating because it's like, come on, like,
yeah.
that wasn't my fault. I feel like I'm fighting the game here.
Yeah.
Which can be a problem considering, you know, the Souls games are all about precision. But for the most part, I think it actually does a pretty good job of more or less replicating that kind of a combat system. I started on Master and then, like, just played the rest on Jedi Knight, which yeah. is, like,
which is like the
normal difficulty. Yeah. And I still found that, you know, especially boss encounters were genuinely challenging.
Yeah, I think there's still a challenge even at that normal level.
Yeah, yeah. And I really liked that because, again, it gives that sense of high stakes, and
yes.
that's so yeah. important. And yeah, like, I felt there was one guy near the end of the game, I won't tell you anything about him, but there was one guy who was just giving me so much grief, and I was like, okay, I'm just gonna keep going and just keep going. And I finally just I did it. And again, like Souls games and the best Souls encounters, you really have to do everything very precisely and very much plan exactly what you're going to do, you know, in sort of against what their attacks are.
Yeah.
That's a really clumsy way of explaining what is essentially like a really elegant system. But you know, you have to think about every encounter. And in the end, like I sort of switched things up with this guy and decided to try a different tactic, and it worked. And I got that same exhilaration you get from defeating a really big, difficult Souls boss. And that was amazing. It was just so exhilarating. And I think that for the most part, like the game does very well with that.
Yeah, I think it really captures those elements very well, from even the smaller scale battles to the larger boss battles. Yeah. And like there is a lightsaber fight with an enemy we've seen in a bunch of trailers, so it's not spoiling that, but you do fight obviously someone else with a lightsaber, and the first time you do is more of one of those like fake out battles, but then there's another one where you're fighting for a longer period of time, and the like the strength and power that it felt like the lightsaber had on both sides of it, and it was like, oh, this is, I need to match up to this person, like I have to punch up. There's a smart, really, like the variety to the enemies, it feels like you have to adapt
to them. And on that note, for people who are listening and like have just started playing, take the time to explore, because you can upgrade your force that way. And honestly, I didn't really upgrade my force. And it's like my force meter, even near the end of the game, was really slight. And so, you know, I kind of crippled myself in that way. So yeah, it's definitely worth seeking out those chests and getting those upgrades.
It can make or break fights for me.
Definitely.
Especially on, I'm playing on Master for the most part. I've knocked it down once or twice, but playing mostly on Master. And yeah, it's like, if I don't have my force powers, I will wait out a battle or just die so I can go back.
And it's just like that feel, you know, like when you're like, okay, I know I could just use push right now to be perfect for slow down. And then you press the button, it's like, bam, 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 because your force meter is empty.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had that way too much.
That'd be a very funny goof in one of the movies if one of them is just like, no!
Makes that noise, that bam, 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 bam.
But speaking of the exploration and stuff, let's sort of wrap up with that, because I do think there are really great elements of it, but I do also think that's where the jank and the problems with the game most shine through. Yeah. I love the setup of the like Metroidvania style come back and explore things.
Yep.
So I think that setup works very well, but it on a like mechanical level doesn't always shine through, and I know you felt sort of similar.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was less about general exploration and more about the sort of the Uncharted style cinematic sequences that rely very much on just you kind of pressing a button to get from one spot to the next.
Yeah.
And in Uncharted, there's a sort of snap-on effect that means that, because these sequences shouldn't really, in my mind, be about precision. They should be more about the spectacle. And I'm talking about like when you're, say, sliding down an ice slide.
Those are my least favorite parts.
And then you like, you know, you spin off and then you got a wall run, and then you got to jump onto a rope and all this sort of thing. Like really, you're sort of meant to feel a sense of breathless, like, wow, that was so much fun. I can't believe I just did that. But instead, the game will punish you if you slide ever so slightly to the left or ever so slightly to the right. And again, if you miss a very precise rope swing, you know, you fall down and that whole sequence is kind of interrupted. Like the momentum is totally ruined.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's really what the devs were going for with those sequences. And I found them so frustrating. And like by the end, I remember there was this one ledge where it required me to, something was wrong with the ledge. It was like glitching or something, because I was sort of falling through it. And I was meant to like do a kind of a leap to the end. And like, it just didn't work.
Yeah.
And I ended up doing it like sort of 8 times. And like, I couldn't even get my experience back because I was already on the slide and
I
couldn't hold down the button in order to get my experience back.
Yeah.
So I was just sliding past it. And every time I was like, God damn you, stupid janky game.
There goes my force powers.
But you know, it was frustrating. It just felt like it just needed a little bit more polish.
Yeah.
And you know, for a game that relies so much on platforming, that would have gone a long way. And in my mind, like that's what would have accelerated it from what essentially is almost an amazing game to an actually amazing game.
Yeah. It's the game as a whole demands sort of a precision from the player, but the way it measures your platforming is, it's almost requiring too much precision.
But it's precision that you can't actually anticipate until you know the route that you need to be going down. So, for example, you know, you need to know that you need to turn left at this point in the slide and not right, but you don't know that until you fail. And it's just like, that's not the controls, satisfying.
The controls a little, he'll veer off course.
Yeah,
and
so yeah.
It's like, oh, well, great. Yeah.
Yeah.
I also was running into a funny thing where you end up being able to pull ropes to you and running. But if you are jumping essentially and pull the rope in midair, but your feet hit the ground again, it negates you grabbing the rope. And so there was one rope I had to try 7 or 8 times because he just kept falling off it. And it wasn't because I missed the jump. It was just because that timing, that weird thing wasn't anticipated. And so it just kind of set you off. And I agree with you. It's the biggest thing is it ruins the momentum of what should be an empowering like platforming.
Absolutely.
Section.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, I know that this might sound petty, like these complaints, but my thing is that there were enough of them scattered throughout the game
sure.
that it just, it did affect my overall experience.
Yeah. There's a few in each world.
Yeah. And sure. it was just a shame because like everything else works so well.
It's so great.
And it was just the one thing that let it down. But again, you know, it is a small complaint against a much larger, great game. And yeah, it's definitely a game of the year for sure.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's definitely up there for me as well. And it's one of those things, you and I said this yesterday when we were talking about the game, you can sense the amazing sequel in this game.
Totally. It's like, definitely, it's got that Assassin's Creed 2, Assassin's Creed 2, to, yeah. you know, the like, it really feels like the beginning or something great, like the foundation is there.
And the fact that this foundation is so good.
So good.
It means where they can go from here is just going to be so fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, overall, we really liked this game.
Really, really liked it.
Yeah, I'm super excited. This was like a nice, pleasant... This is kind of the biggest game to end the year. Like, this is the last big game, and it's nice to have something that both surprised us and really like satisfied a lot of high expectations in a lot of ways.
Yep.
So thank you, Lucy, for joining me.
Thank you so much. I'm just going to go watch the Cats trailer again.
Have fun.
I will.
Go do that. We'll do a breakdown on next week's episode.
Sounds
if you
great.
Want for like 2 hours or so.
Cool.
Perfect. And Jonathan, I'll throw back to you a couple hours in the future. Good luck. Thank you so much, Lucy, for those opinions of Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. I do remember them from 2 hours earlier today. I do want to talk, though, how you both are feeling about the game. I wanted to start out the discussion, though. Ansemana from the group said, just please don't spoil it. We are going to stay away from like story-defining spoilers of the game. Obviously, we're going to talk about some of the mechanics, the worlds. Pretty much anything that's been within preview and trailer purview is, I think, how we kind of stick to it.
Yeah, I will say stay off of YouTube until you're done with this game because there are like some relentlessly spoilery thumbnails.
Oh, interesting.
That just, it just sucks. It just like shows just key conflicts and moments and characters and you're like, what? I didn't know the main boss of this game was Wicket the Ewok.
Yeah. Qui-Gon dies? What the hell?
No, you become Baby Yoda in the first 20 minutes.
Spoilers are kind of like subjective, but honestly, just seeing certain images, if you have enough gears turning, that can totally ruin everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just be like, oh, I know exactly what that means, and now it's ruined for me. And
that's a pain.
It's been a bad time for that with Star Wars these days. But
I do want to say, if you're playing the game, it's not an easy game. And if you are playing, check out the IGN wiki. Our team is putting an amazing amount of work into that wiki to answer all your questions and to help you through some of the labyrinthine levels that you'll come across.
Yep.
But to start off the discussion here, how do you both feel about this game? Brian, you finished it.
Matt, yeah, yeah. Quite a bit. It's actually really cool. I talked about the preview event I went to on this show, and I got to play 3 hours of it. And I was like, this feels like it might be my game of the year, and it's really shaping up to be something. And you always have to caveat that with like, but the developers could totally drop the ball, and they didn't. Like,
is this your game of the year?
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. And it's like, and
what about Shenmue 3? That's not out yet.
Yeah,
well, we have not played that.
We have not played it.
Just for reference,
don't give up hope yet. It could always be Shenmue. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Things could turn around. It might be Shenmue 3 in the 0 hour of this weekend. Yeah. No. Why would you do that? You're summoning Shenmue 3 fans on me now.
I just really wanted you to have a terrible year.
Yeah, great. Thanks a lot. Thanks for pooping on my weekend. The thing about this game that everybody has like sort of documented by now is that it's essentially this like comfort food kit bashing of a bunch of pre-established systems and other games. Video games are an iterative medium, but at the same time, they're also revolutionary and cutthroat, groundbreaking. And sometimes I don't think they necessarily need to be. Like, I think being ambitious and, you know, reinventing the wheel and creating these brand new systems is awesome and it's important and it's necessary. It needs to keep happening to further the future of this medium. That said, I think sometimes if you take a bunch of shit that works, you put it together and it and you put it in a Star Wars like wrapper, and it kicks ass, and that coincides with this sort of lack of Star Wars games we've had for a very long time. It's sort of this perfect storm, and it the final product is this really excellent package that I think I've put like 24, 25 hours into now.
If more games decided, what if we combine Metroid with Uncharted and Tomb Raider and a universe people love? Yeah, keep doing that.
Yeah, that's not a bad thing. Throw in a little Zelda, a little Prince of Persia, and then like a little bit of Dark Souls, and it's like, yeah, you have something there.
Yeah,
I do think it's interesting that this game has difficulty options. That's we spent a significant portion of, I believe it was this year. The arguments are so tired that
that was a Sekiro conversation.
Yeah,
that was this year about whether or not you should or shouldn't have difficulty options in games. And I think one of the things that I maintained was like, if FromSoft wants to ship their games without those options, that's entirely their prerogative. If the game sells well, then that is the ultimate message. If the sales are dying and they're like, we have to find a way to boost these, then sure, add them. Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order just kind of quietly crept in and was just like, well, we have a Soulsborne style game with difficulty options. They didn't make a big deal about it. They didn't say like, here's our answer to the debate. They just put them there. Mm-hmm. And if you want to pump up the difficulty, go for it. If you're getting your butt kicked on a boss and you want to drop it down and keep exploring, go for it. The game doesn't ding you in any meaningful way.
It does kind of neg you in the menu a little bit.
It does,
I felt like
yeah.
the description of Jedi Knight was like, oh, you never played an action game before? I guess try this one.
Yeah.
Even though that's the normal mode. But
yeah.
I think they're well-balanced.
Yeah, I totally agree. But the game itself is exactly really what I had hoped it would pan out to be, which was sort of like this year's version of something that we didn't get this year. We didn't get a God of War, a Tomb Raider, or an Uncharted this year. We did get Sekiro, which is awesome because that gave me my Soulsborne itch. But this game basically took all of these great systems and gave me this world that I really enjoyed exploring. One of my gripes about this game is it does have some technical issues.
Yeah.
Playing on PS4 Pro, I did see some texture pop in. There was a couple times where like I was terrified that the game would hard crash, like it would stutter. There's definitely some issues there. There's obviously some of the loading tunnels, which are like, you'll see Cal and BD1, who is like my favorite video
BD1
game.
BD1 is amazing.
Oh my God, he's like one of my favorite sidekicks in video game history ever.
So good.
So also like in my top three Star Wars droids.
Yeah.
But they go through a lot of those tunnels, which are very clearly loading new environments. But they're interesting. Like, I think those will go away next gen.
Yeah.
But
I will say, I think we had said this before air, those are like a dime a dozen in games this generation. I think these are my favorite because they are so much is happening as you're moving through
the
tunnel.
They're pretty dynamic.
Like BD1 is animated very fun as he moves through all the spaces. There will sometimes be creatures that pop in and flow out, and it feels a little bit more like, okay, at least there's something going on.
Yeah, I love the lightsaber combat in this game. The more you upgrade certain things, I'm going to stay away from spoilers, but it gets a lot more sort of manic and modular in terms of like chaining and combining a bunch of different moves. And I was happy to find out that those actually translate over to traversal as well. Like force pulling certain things towards you after wall running and chaining them into this and this turns into this like really interesting experience that you don't get in Tomb Raider on Uncharted, because those games don't have magical, mystical powers. It's also like this, it's got this endlessly customizable lightsaber that amounts to very little because you don't actually really see much of it in the game.
It's so small.
But you know in your head that you have something.
Like Red Dead Redemption customization for guns, where you're like, you want the pearl handled finish on your revolver and the tassel, and you're like, I don't see it. I like change.
Yeah, I know it's there. So
speaking of that, Johnny from the Facebook group asked, what color would your lightsaber be if you were a Jedi? So one, what is your lightsaber color in the game that you've been playing, and what would you want your real life lightsaber?
I immediately went to green.
Mm-hmm. So did I.
Yeah, that's
green.
That's
green is good. One of my biggest issues with Star Wars is that there are only like canonically like four colors of lightsabers.
Yeah,
which is horse apples that was dictated by Lucas in Attack of the Clones, where that could be any color of the rainbow. Instead, there's like three colors and then Mace Windu.
Yeah.
I would like a yellow lightsaber, like Plo Koon had in Jedi Power Battles, but which since has been swept from retcon.
I read that this is, correct me if I'm wrong, because you guys know Star Wars better than I do by a mile. This is canonically in the new like canon, not EU, the first time a canonically orange lightsaber has been included in this new like official canon.
Yeah.
Which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's nuts.
And that's a pre-order bonus, unfortunately.
Yeah.
That's one of the few like...
What?
Yeah, there's a... not microtransactions in this game, but they did obviously have to do some pre-order thing. And this
I actually asked PR about that, and I didn't get an answer back on whether or not those will be released to the general public at some point.
3 months down the line, they probably are just aren't allowed to sell.
Yeah, I mean, we should reiterate this is an EA Star Wars game that shipped without any multiplayer or any microtransactions or anything of that. This is Respawn's storytelling vision through and through. This is their fourth game this generation.
Since the studio was founded.
Yeah, the studio was founded. And their fourth game that has above like an 83 or 84 on Metacritic.
And the fourth game that has wall running.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They love wall running.
They do.
I think in order to get into Respawn's, like as a job there, you have to wall run.
You have to try out a wall. You have to do parkour. Yeah. Max, how have you been enjoying the game?
Oh God, I love it so much. It's so good. I mean, it's exactly what I wanted. It's bits and pieces of things I already liked. It is, I mean, you mentioned all the things that it's reminiscent of, but it totally does have some Soulsborne guts in there.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, partially the difficulty, but also sort of the structure and like unlocking shortcuts, which is cool. I've been playing on a little tiny baby mode because I'm a coward, but also because I'd rather
journalist.
Yeah. No, I'd rather get frustrated by Bloodborne. Like I want to when I'm being a Jedi, I want to feel like a badass. Like I want to just run in there and just mess stuff up. And the part that's fun for me is all the puzzles and, you know, traversal and just exploration. So.
Yeah, the sense of like world building and the way it's crafted is so fun to explore.
To piggyback on that, I think a lot of the difficulty in the Soulsborne games works and is kind of married to the kind of inherent fear that you have turning a corner in that game. There's a lot of like really scary stuff in Dark Souls and Bloodborne. Like it's horror themed and horror inspired, right? And like you turn the corner and there's this like nightmare monster you have to kill, like some giant horse beast skeleton. Whereas Fallen Order has like, you know, it has some creepy enemies, but like big spiders and stuff, which are just flat out gross, but not a lot of like, oh, that is a horrifying thing that's going to kill me. There's stuff that kicks your ass.
Like, I like Bloodborne because it is deeply upsetting and depressing. Star Wars, this is already in the dark times. It's already very upsetting, but I don't need to see this like, you know, teenage Padawan get killed by a scout trooper with a Tonfa. Like, I don't need that. I'm like, I know it's already...
And it does straddle the line to me, like, tonally, and I said this when I spoke to Lucy, of, like, telling a serious story, because at the end of the day, there are, like, soap operatic hero's journey aspects of Star Wars, of course, but there are also the weird, silly creatures and world design, and I feel like this game gets both of those.
Yeah, such a good balance.
Like, just even on Bogano, which is the first world you go to when you can start exploring worlds, and just, are they called... Bogdoys or whatever, the like little scampering guys running around.
Yep. Bunnies!
The basically bunnies versus Bogdos, which are these giant salamander guys that are...
There's a creature in the periphery on that planet that you can't reach that just exists there.
Yeah.
He's just this like gigantic like whale lizard slug thing that just like yawns and every now and then will stick his head in a hole and like... Mm-hmm. Have you noticed that?
I haven't.
No. He's off to the side. I spent 20 minutes jumping off different ledges to get to him.
Yeah, I was like, I want to meet him or kill him.
Yeah.
This is obviously this game takes place after Revenge of the Sith.
Yes.
After Order 66 happens. And I think that's like a really cool place to tell a story. I feel like it's a really explored area in Star Wars, and I'm usually kind of burnt out on like all the stuff that happened in the margins around the prequels. There's like so many shows about that.
This is like the deepest into like the unexplored territory.
Yeah, it's like
this and Solo that exist in that time frame.
Yeah, it's pretty far into like the almost New Hope era, and so you have a lot of like, it's actually a really smart way to sort of bridge generations, because the prequels kids will find a lot of stuff in this game that they'll really dig, and then people that grew up watching like A New Hope and stuff like that, this is right on the edge of that, and so you'll see like probe droids and you'll see other stuff that's like recognizable from that era.
It's also a really interesting fusion visually, because one of the issues with the prequels is that was a lot of developing CGI technology, and it was kind of like you'd see a lot of stuff happening where you're like, this is a work in progress, we're still not quite there yet, and the original trilogy is all practical effects. We're at a point with video games where it's almost photorealism, but everything is still CGI. So we've got like hyper realistic, like, I mean, this is I would say visually like a step down from what we're used to with like the Battlefront games.
Yep.
But it works because of it.
Yeah.
Like it's kind of like the characters all have like a little bit of a video gamey look to them.
Yeah. There's definitely a little like rough around the edges technology stuff, which Lucy and I got into a bit, so I don't want to dwell too much on that. But yeah, there's definitely a level of like,
but it
they're working in Unreal versus working in Frostbite, which are very different.
It hides the seams really well, and it also like what I adore is like how it it cherry picks different parts of like the canon. Like it really does a wonderful job of connecting the two trilogies.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
a really good job.
Sorry.
I was going to say like the fact that you see vehicles from both trilogies kind of interacting with each other, and the fact that the whole thing sort of opens
and droids,
like a, yeah, too. And on a junkyard planet, and you're yeah. like, oh, okay, so like here's the things we're used to looking shiny and clean, looking dirty, and here's the things we're looking like used to looking dirty, looking shiny and clean.
Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah. It's a good way of putting it.
Speaking of all the story elements of it, John asked, do you think Cal's as a protagonist fits in well as a post-Order 66 Jedi? Following up from last week's discussion of maybe not having Aloy as the main Horizon protagonist, can you see them leaving Cal behind in the future, maybe exploring the Sith side or having a well-known Jedi in the lead, cough, Obi-Wan, cough? and I wanted to talk about this largely of because they have, and this is a thing I've harped on a lot just because I think it's really interesting that they did this from the start. They've called it always Star Wars Jedi colon Fallen yes. Order, and that clearly dictates to me Star Wars Jedi is a brand they want to continue. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this will be a franchise for
this
sure.
This is Star Wars Arkham.
Yeah, without spoiling anything, and I'm not there, do we feel like it makes sense to continue Cal's story in certain ways, like the characters that we see
he's killed by Wicket the Ewok in the final chapter.
Sure, yeah, of course. Does it make sense to try like different Jedi stories? Do we think like an anthology-like series could work?
Yes and no. The weird thing that's happening is right now, within the same week, we got The Mandalorian and we got Fallen Order, and both of those things exist at the tail end of a trilogy after a massive battle has caused a destruction of a significant group of people. In one, it's the Jedi at the tail end of Order 66, and at the other, it's the Empire at the tail end of Return of the Jedi. And these characters that are established in both of these stories happening concurrently but in different timelines are essentially never seen or heard from again in the films later on, which makes it interesting because it implies that if there's any importance with these characters, they are eventually either killed off or forced into hiding in some way, or the galaxy's huge and you just don't pay attention to them anymore.
A galaxy should be pretty big.
It should, but what if it was just about six people in one family for 45
Chewbacca
years?
What if Chewbacca and Yoda went to college together?
What if Darth Vader made C-3PO?
Yeah.
All these questions answered and more in the prequels.
What if Darth Maul was friends with Han Solo's girlfriend?
And he called her.
Yeah. Anyway.
Is he the one who's appeared in the most things? Because he's also in both animated series, Darth Maul.
Darth Maul?
He's like in... I mean, other than...
He's in a lot
like,
of stuff.
No, it's main, Wicket the Ewok is Wicket in the most Ewok, things. Course, yeah, he's in two Ewok films and Return of the Jedi. That's more than any other Star Wars character. Yeah,
it's actually him and another Ewok are dressed up trying to sneak into a movie in a Darth Vader costume. That's how Darth Vader was invented.
I'd watch that movie.
Everybody knows that.
Wanted to quickly also from the group, Jamal asked, I'm going to bleep myself, why the F did they not put a fast travel option for Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order?
And so you could unlock the elevators.
Yes, this is a game very much built around unlocking shortcuts as you progress through levels, labyrinthine tunnels that go all throughout different planets and essentially encouraging you to backtrack once you get new powers so you can explore.
Yeah.
I think that's the reason fast travel is not included in terms of like encouraging you to explore every nook and cranny, but it would be nice.
I think it would have been cool if they had an exploration thing. Like it's still a charming thing to me, but I can absolutely see myself getting frustrated if I'm trying to like go back and do things. It would have been nice if like later on they were like, hey, here's Jedi teleportation or whatever. It's fast travel, you know?
Yeah. I don't think it's as like egregious as the way they sort of like walled off fast travel and Horizon for the first few hours until you unlocked it. It feels more like you're in bed and you're thirsty and you don't want to walk into the kitchen to get a glass of water. You're like, it's just far enough where it's a pain in the ass. I didn't find it that frustrating, but there was definitely a few times on one or two planets where the Metroid Prime map system, which was usually my friend as a guy who grew up playing those games, got pretty like cumbersome with the amount of sort of like ups and downs.
Yeah.
And like elevators of where they go and where they end.
The up and down system of like different levels and it being this obviously hologram-esque. The design of it is smart, but it's not always the most useful to actually get through a level.
Yep.
If they're not going to do fast travel, I think a cool thing for like a world like this would just be sort of a like an OnStar, like a... just a map quest type thing where there's like a visual arrow guiding you.
Yeah. I was surprised there was
a line through
like
the thing. Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Or even like in the, you know, Jedi prayer fire bonfire pits or whatever. If there was just an option of like return ship, like, not even to have people like, you know, jumping all around the map, but just an instant return to ship. 'Cause a lot of the missions funnel into, your crew, which is awesome, being like, hey, come back in and hang out and check your holo table for further instructions or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then you have to do that long, sort of arduous return back.
Yeah. And speaking of your ship, keep going back to it. Keep checking things throughout the world. You can...
Because Wicket the Ewok might be waiting for you.
Wicket the Ewok right. might be ready to kill you. But overall, obviously, we've really enjoyed this game. I think there's a lot more to talk about. We're unfortunately a little short on time.
Damn it.
So we'll talk
to,
in the future.
To bookend this really quick, yes. There is a side mission that you should do where BD-1 scans things in the game and you can bring seeds back to your ship and grow them into little trees. And one of those trees, we don't know yet, could grow cherry tomatoes.
Destin, let us know if that's true. It will grow, Wicket the Ewok. No, I'm very curious to hear more from you at home. If you've been playing it, write in to beyond@ign.com. Let us know how you're feeling about it. This is, I think, a game, as we go into the end of the year, we'll be talking about a lot for end-of-year discussions, overall just where this franchise goes in the future. It's a pretty good game. You should play it.
Yeah. I like a Star Wars.
I like a good Star Wars.
Good Star Wars. Yeah. Before we quickly wrap up, just a couple more segments, and one of those is Memory Card. It did work. I'm going to bring up the memory card in particular that I want to read this week. But of course, memory card is our weekly segment where we read letters from you, the viewers and listeners at home, of your wacky, weird, happy, fun, sad, whatever memories from your PlayStation life. You write in, to beyond@ign.com with the subject line memory card. We read those on the show. I forgot to star this one, so if you guys wouldn't mind again, please vamping for me for 30 seconds.
Want to talk about Wicket the Ewok?
Sure.
He's pretty cool, huh?
I think he's great. Can we talk about that weird like energy bar that he takes from Leia and the Return of the Jedi?
Oh yeah, that Luna bar.
It is a little.
He
Luna
bites
bar.
And it was like.
Yeah, it's weird because I know he eats well because he has like devices that trap things all over the place. It's odd because I had like a healthy breakfast this morning. Uh-huh. I was walking to work down Market Street in San Francisco, and there was a woman there with a cart, and she was giving out Clif bars. And it was like dark chocolate sea salt with almonds. And I was like, you got me. So I took it. I have a feeling Wicket had a very similar day where he woke up, he ate one of those like weird mousses that they catch in that bag.
I almost guarantee he got violently ill after that. Like, I love that Princess Leia is like, hey, here's a Luna bar I had in my hat. Do you want it? And he's like, I've only ever had meat in my life and maybe berries and like live, you know.
Oh, no, he's eating people.
Yeah, no, people. That's me. That's what I meant by that.
Ben wrote into beyond@ign.com with memory card. Ben, who has actually written in before and originally said he was going to write this in about 3 months ago, but he did, so he's kept up his promise. Ben wrote in and said he had a follow-up to his previous emails and attached a picture of his child in an adorable Halloween costume. We'll get to that in a second. But he had a Kingdom Hearts memory card. So here it is. I moved around a lot between the ages of 11 and 16, and it caused me to have a pretty bad anxiety disorder. It got to the point where I was having panic attacks and had a real difficulty going to public places, especially school. When I was 16, my family moved to New Hampshire, and we decided that I would take a year of homeschooling before going back. Now I've been playing games since I was 3, and they've always been the perfect way for me to calm down and take my mind off of my anxiety. Naturally, when my mom told me that the two kids, brothers from church, were going to start coming over once a week so that I had some interaction with people my age, I knew just what we'd be doing. It wasn't long before John, Jesse, and I became quick friends over our weekly gaming sessions of Mario Party, Time Splitters 2, Call of Duty, and Guitar Hero. While multiplayer games were great, I also couldn't wait to show them some of the single-player games I was going through, handing off the controller to rotate players. When I happened upon Kingdom Hearts and watched the opening cinematic, I had to share it because it was one of the most beautiful and stunning visuals I had seen in a game at the time. And as a 7-year-old, or however old I was when that happened, I get that. Little did I know that the theme of friendship would be so prevalent in the series. While I shared updates about the game with my new friends, I will never forget staying up late and finishing it on my own. And the impact of that ending, in a time when I felt disconnected and isolated the most, video games had helped me forge friendships and hold on to them, and something about that final boss fight and closing cinematics connected with me in a way that no video game has since. 12 years later, Jesse was the best man at my wedding, and John was a groomsman, and I'm still playing the newest Call of Duty with Jesse on PS4. I've also managed to get my anxiety in check. I regularly get in front of a class of college students to teach English, and I've actually been flying out of state to conduct interviews for my doctoral research on video games and education, of course.
Holy crap.
Wow.
Sorry that turned into a lengthy email. As I said before, I appreciate all you do with Beyond and showing the power of video games through storytelling. Feel free to take this one or leave it. Wanted to take it. Just thought I'd share. Please send my thanks and well wishes to the Beyond crew as well as MVC, but they're not here except for Brian. So tell them, I guess.
It's okay. I'll let them know.
Oh, and final quick note. My wife and I are expecting our first child in April, and I had to laugh So forgive me about the saying it was your child in a Halloween costume. And I had to laugh when my sister got us a, quote, player three has entered the game onesie. I immediately thought of Brian saying nobody plays three-player multiplayer games a few months ago.
Isn't that great to be just like that relative that's just like, actually,
yes,
when people mean well?
Anyway, thank you so much, Ben, for writing with that memory. If you have a memory you'd like to share in the segment, write in to beyond@ign.com with the subject line memory card, and we'll read those on the show to come.
Who was the child?
I think he might have accidentally written first. I have to go back to his original email, and unless you guys want to vamp.
Did he just attach like a random picture of a kid to it?
You guys vamp more about Star Wars universe.
So anyway, I think that if you can eat a like barbecued adult man, you can eat a Luna bar or whatever.
What if he's got like peanut allergies? I want to ask about, did he ever wear a green hoodie?
Wicked?
Yeah, because they made an action figure that comes with like an alternate hoodie instead of that like little nasty brown one.
He's oh, really?
Got like a little green hooded sweatshirt. It looks like a Frodo hoodie, like a little elvish, you know. But like it's just an action, and I don't know if that's from one of the Ewok adventure films because it's been a cool minute since I watched those.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, they're not on Disney Plus because yeah, so they're not canon.
Watch them.
It was his nephew. There we go. I found the original email. The kid in the photo. In the costume. It's a very adorable photo. It was his nephew. Anyway, thank you so much for writing with that question. Just to quickly wrap up the show, Max, Alex asked, what's in Max's pocket?
Whole bunch of cherry tomatoes I stole off of Destin's desk.
All right.
No, do I have any? Oh, actually, wait. Anything? Hold on. What do we got? We got a. I got these glasses because I'm getting old.
Yeah.
Wearing these glasses a little bit here and there. I look like...
Stabbing yourself in the eye with them.
Stabbed yourself
with them. Because I couldn't see because I wasn't wearing the glasses.
I like them.
But yeah, I don't know. Like I should probably wear these when I'm staring at a screen all day, but I don't want to do that thing because I also just got a haircut. I don't want people to be like, hey, what's up with the, I was like, the new glasses? Look. Yeah. Ideally, they would just not recognize me at all, like Superman cartoons trained us to believe.
Sadly, I recognize you, and I think it all looks good.
I think I have anything else cool in my pockets.
Except for the cherry tomatoes.
No, I had to go through airport security before I came in here.
That's fair.
Yeah, I thought it was a plane, but it's actually a...
It's just a studio. Thank you so much for asking what's in Max's pocket. Maybe we'll find out next week. Who knows? Anyway, that was Podcast Beyond episode 618. Thank you all so much for listening and watching to this episode. Beyond is normally live every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific when we're not kicking over cans at beyond.ign.com, youtube.com/IGNBeyond, and I... the podcast services around the world.
That can was full of cherry tomatoes. They're all over the place.
Will you stop?
We'll clean it up after. We'll get Lucy to do it. She wasn't here. Of course, when we're not recording the show, we are also on IGN.com, youtube.com/IGN, making a bunch of fun videos and articles and wonderful things for all of you at home to watch, listen, and read. So please check all of that out. It keeps these literal lights on.
Sometimes they're not on. Sometimes it's your fault because you didn't watch enough.
Read the articles.
Read our videos.
Power us with love.
Yeah. Anything else you guys want to quickly shout out that you're working on?
No, just if you're using social media or Twitter and stuff like that, just tweet at Destin Legarry and say, hey, I'd love a big handful or two of those delicious plump cherry tomatoes.
That's a very good point. But also, go check out the article we did on the silliest Star Wars games. We wrote a feature about like all of the goofiest and funniest and weirdest Star Wars games, including that weird Lucas learning one about Jar Jar's journey, which is like a Newgrounds dress-up sim for 4-year-olds.
I give it 9 out of 10 cherry tomatoes.
Also, Brian has a new record going up this Friday.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. I should have led with that.
Dumbass.
Yeah. I have a new album coming out on Friday. It's called Revangelion, so go listen to that. It's going to be free on every major streaming platform.
It's based on the hit anime.
Yeah.
That I Naruto. Spent years trying to get you to watch, and you finally watched.
Good
and you
job.
Made an album.
You did it.
I'm going to be putting out a Bloodborne t-shirt, probably.
I think you should.
Yeah.
I'm going to be making IGN the musical. It's coming eventually.
I like
that's
making
all I
a
got.
Kingdom Hearts cherry tomato pot pie. It's going to be really disgusting.
You can at Destin Legarry at DestinLegarie with all of your cherry tomato comments.
Don't even say anything. Just send him the highest res photo of cherry tomatoes you can find on the
please
internet.
Do that.
And
please.
Just be like, did you lose these? Do you need more of these?
Please do that. And if you want to find us on Twitter, don't add us in those tweets. Don't let him onto this.
Yeah,
at all.
Don't. No.
But you can find us on Twitter. I'm at JM Dornbush. Max is at Max Scoville, and Brian is at Agent Bizzle, and Lucy is at Luce O'Brien. Again, this has been Podcast Beyond. Thank you so much for listening and watching and putting up with all these cherry tomatoes. And as always, Beyond.
Beyond.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it.
or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Linsky.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.